Welcome back. You're watching Stock Watch with me, Bright Khumalo. And tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Nick Krell from FNB Wealth and Investments and Merrill Pick from Old Mutual Investments. Don't forget to send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag StockWatch. Nick, Merrill, welcome to the show. I'll be making a joke about how people are still using SMS, but funny enough, that's where we're most active in terms of questions, so I can't make that joke.
Don't do it.
Yeah. Nick, I'll start with you. Can you give us a market wrap for, you know, local markets? I mean, we seem to be, you know, seeing a cool off here from the reverse rally that we've seen in the past, 4 days of trading?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the sort of potential game changer news this week has to come out of tomorrow, Jerome Powell talking at Jackson Hole. And so until that point, I think everyone and most investors are kind of sitting on the sidelines to a large extent. You haven't seen volatility or rather the amount traded going through being, you know, stellar in our markets or in global markets. I think everyone's kind of on tender hooks, as it were. Wondering what's going to happen and what sort of direction the Fed is going to give us in terms of how aggressive they're going to be to try and sort of, you know, put a lid on inflation and whether or not that's going to lead us into sort of a global recession. We can know from the previous time that he talked that he gave the market pause for thought there, and the market certainly took away that perhaps he wasn't going to be as aggressive as they were initially anticipating, and you've seen quite a significant sort of rally off the lows hitting mid-June. But now with the, you know, I suppose financial conditions loosening to a large extent, you're probably going to have a look and see whether or not he's going to be as sort of market-friendly in terms of his commentary, or it's going to scare the market. And I'm certainly on tender hooks, waiting to see what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah, and Merrill, I'm not quite sure what's going on here with OPEC Plus. I mean, Saudi Arabia coming out and saying that, you know, they'll be, well, they encourage, you know, all these producers to, you know, sort of slow down on the many barrels they're producing currently because they don't like the price currently. They liked it even more when it was higher. And the reason for it was very vague, something along the lines of, you know, volatility. I was like, what's that has to do with anything, you know? You're the producers, mm-hmm. give us oil, make sure that the price is right by, you know, increasing supply. But clearly they don't like that.
For sure. It's a fascinating space, right? Because, I mean, Biden was in the Saudi Arabian kingdom about a month ago. And off the back of that, there were sort of promises, but if you examine them, not really significant promises to increase production. So you could see this as a change, you know, a change of direction or reversing that commitment. I think there's a few things at play. So clearly the oil producing nations would have taken a lot of fiscal pressure in 2020 when oil prices crashed. I'm not sure to the extent that those revenues have been replaced. On a break even, I think Saudi Arabia's budget can, as a country, can withstand $65 to $70 oil. So anything above that, they actually should be quite comfortable. But also, as much as the OPEC Plus have been ratcheting up their targets or their quotas, over the last 6 months, they've actually been failing to meet those increased production targets anyway. So it raises question marks about actually how much spare capacity is really left. And then the big battle that's been raging since probably 2014, when the U.S. shale producers really took off, is this market share battle within crude. And I think OPEC Plus, led by Saudi Arabia, pretty much started a price war, if you will, during 2020, won back a lot of that market share, drove a lot of marginal shale producers out of the market. And we see that shale oil volume starting to come back now. So I do look at that and wonder, what is the game here? Because the higher those prices stay, it actually just starts to entice shale producers back into the market. So I would have thought a slightly lower oil price that still suits the budgets of the OPEC plus nations would have been a more rational way to go.
I mean, these guys are still profitable at $40 a barrel, right? Whereas shale guys are probably, not going to rush into the market at that price. But I mean, like you're saying, you reminded us of 2020. I mean, that was a crazy time to be alive. We saw the Western Texas turning negative, or at least their futures. So that was a crazy time to be alive. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to explain that to my kids one day. Let's jump into our questions for today. We'll start with two very vague, well, not vague, but hard questions. One from Noah, who says, "Good evening, Bright. Can you please ask your panel what the effect will be, from the Inflation Reduction Act that's recently promulgated by the US have on green metal producers like Core Lithium, given that EV automakers will get a tax credit? And what are the short to medium-term implications?" I mean, on top of that question, we have another one, which is asking about Invictus, which is another Australian stock from the SMS line. So I've got a lot of Australian stocks here for you, Nick, for this evening.
Right. Well, thanks, Brian. Thanks very much for that. I suppose my knowledge of small Australian miners is going to be pretty slim, so I'm not really going to talk too much about that. I think with regards to the Reduction Act, I mean, there's so many different moving parts that it's pretty tough to ascertain exactly what it's going to mean at a granular level for specific companies or even specific metals overall. I think the world is moving in that sort of direction where we're understand now, and specifically if you're European, having outsourced a lot of your sort of fuel requirements is, potentially, it's not a great sort of idea, right? So there's certainly a lot of a move to sort of move towards being greener on the one side, but then second to that, localized production, understanding that one has sort of control of it into your own grid, so on and so forth, and trying to, get a lot of impetus going into those sort of industries. I think it's a very interesting space, notwithstanding the idea that it was a very interesting space, the last couple of years, and really with Russia, Ukraine, things got sort of turned on its head to a certain extent. So it's always, quite difficult to understand the longer term implications. I think the direction and the roadmap is certainly positive.
Okay, and obviously there's a lot of money to be made and lost, but if you look at the past couple of years, especially in those battery metals, I mean, there's only been really one winner, which is something like a Glencore, but that you can't really see the benefit from a company that big and diversified. So I don't know, man. It's hard to call these things. And your thoughts, Meryl?
Yeah, look, it's the longer term story clearly is there towards electrification. I think we've seen over the last 5 years most of the global car manufacturers coming out with, much like every oil producer comes out with 2050 net zero targets. All the OEMs have, 2030 no more combustible engines or something of that nature. The maths that seems to be missing in the equation is the availability
Of
and the
such
production
metals.
levels of all the metals required to go into the batteries, lithium being one of them. So, it's certainly, I can understand why someone would be bullish on lithium, even as it's quite strong, but to incentivize new, production and mines being built, the price would have to be quite high. Sibanye was taking some small position in a lithium operation as well. I think what's going to be interesting is how this evolves geopolitically, because a lot of the rare earth minerals that are required for electric vehicles are the supply is dominated by China. So I think the world has been spooked now by not obscure things, but suddenly waking up to the fact that, oh, Ukraine produces 50% of sunflower oil, you know, which you never thought of before this. It suddenly brings to mind the risk of relying on unique niche commodities from one country that's maybe not
As stable as we thought it was.
necessarily that friendly. So I think that will also bring a new lens into how electric vehicles develop from here.
So how are we looking on offshore markets? I mean, second day of green. Hey, I never thought I'd be saying this, after the week we had.
I mean, I think as Nick mentioned, the market is largely driven by inflation outlook, growth expectations, and interest rate expectations at this point. And I think offshore markets, certainly in the US, are starting to price in already interest rate cuts looking towards the back end of next year. So I think the market is pretty much saying, expecting inflation to roll over, expecting the Fed to soften their stance, and let the good times roll on again. I'm not that sure, that I'm that bullish. Let's see what Jerome Powell says tomorrow. But I think the Fed doesn't even really look at the parts that are causing inflation to really be high at this point because they can't really control them, being food inflation and energy prices. So yeah, they can control the housing market and demand for goods and services.
System.
But in the past, this is not, the 1970s, but in the past, when inflation has really been a problem, it's been due to outside external forces which cannot be controlled, like geopolitical issues and commodity. So it echoes a lot of that here. So I would be surprised if the Fed did slow down, and if they allude to that tomorrow, that they still intend to remain hawkish, you could see some steam coming out.
Yeah, but I mean, even in that case, I mean, like you're saying, if you can't control the price of the commodity, input prices are still going to be higher, meaning food inflation is going to be there for longer, and who's going to bear the burden of that? I don't have to be Mr. Buzzkill here. We've got a question here from Eugene who says, "Can I have the panel's view on Sibanye-Stillwater with their release today of the first half performance? Although they had a lot of headwinds all over, they still managed to pay a huge dividend and produced a healthy profit of 12.3 billion rands, way higher than what we saw last year. Is this company a big buy, Nick?" I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, certainly not only Sibanye-Stillwater, but the whole sort of platinum complex, from a share price perspective, has significantly underperformed what the metal pricing has sort of done in dollars. A lot of sort of froth has come out of that market, and it is looking pretty beaten down. And I suppose the reality behind it one needs to have some sort of idea on where these sort of prices are going to go, what sort of demand is going to come through for both platinum and palladium. Obviously, the sort of the elephant in the room comes through from rhodium. Rhodium making sort of a lot of these companies super profits, last year, etc. Very small percentage of production, but massively cash generative for them. And depending on the outlook for what actually happens to rhodium, I think if we were to have a look at it now and say, listen, all else being equal, is the platinum sector a buy? Yes, I would say it is. Having said that, at the moment, I still think that there can be some volatility around prices. And then, not too dissimilar to what we saw in 2016, when at that point, commodity prices were under significant sort of pressure. In that sort of environment, the actual costs coming through for these sort of producers was whittled down so that they made as much profit as they possibly could. And very similar perhaps to what actually happened during 2020 and 2021, where, costs were almost unsustainably low. And so what you are seeing now is still some pretty good top line growth coming through, but unfortunately, costs are, growing beyond what your revenue sort of pickup is at the moment. And that looks to kind of continue. On top of that, we have seen some sort of production issues and misses. And specifically with Sibanye, their Stillwater sort of acquisition, that continues to give them sort of headwinds, which is a bit of a worry, I suppose, for investors as a whole. I think, look at it, listen, if you have a look at the share price, it is looking pretty attractive at these pretty much beaten down sort of prices. Whether it's a big buy, big letters, BIG, I'm not quite sure, but in my mind, it would be something interesting at these prices.
Okay, interesting. You'd look at it at these prices. I mean, it's trading, you know, at the same price it did in July 2020, you know, in the middle of the pandemic, after the, you know, the push up because metal prices were running at that time. I mean, Meryl, I want to ask you, any varying thoughts and views maybe on the operational level of, you know, a company like Stillwater and Sibanye Stillwater, sorry?
Yeah, it's a tricky one where I've, you know, they've changed their strategy, I suppose, a few times from the original spinning out from gold fields, harvesting what's left of those assets and paying a very rich dividend or trying to maintain a strong yield.
Yeah.
I think they are at the moment on a good yield. But if you look at the model has been kind of acquire something, strip out costs and get it to perform better, and then in a few years' time acquire something else. So I think the issue with Sibanye is always are they close to an acquisition? What would that acquisition be? What would they pay for it? Stillwater was a dilutive deal at the time. In hindsight, they timed the palladium market very, very well. But that has sort of bailed the deal out because it hasn't lived up to the original operational projections. And I think the costs per ounce, they are, just, I think, perhaps let's say around 50% higher than what they were initially envisioned. But because the palladium price went from 700 to over 2,000, you know, it's made the company look quite smart. I think there are less risky players within the PGM space that might not give you quite as much leverage if the basket price takes off, but less operational risk. They're going into wage negotiations now in the South African PGM space, and historically they've had a bit of a tense relationship with labor. So they have a tendency to have protracted strikes compared to the other players in the sector.
Yeah, I mean, get your blogs about how much, you know, the big boss made as compared to the average investor. I mean, worker, so get ready for those to be all over the media and sponsored, obviously. We have a question here from Fritz, who says, hello Stockwatch, I find that City Lodge is very promising. They recently sold off a couple of the East African hotels to reduce operating leverage while providing revenues. Occupancies are up, you know, and you know, this is obviously because of post-COVID openings. And at a share price of around 4 rands, is it far off its fair value? Or, you know, you guys have differing thoughts here. He wants to know if this is worth buying at these levels. Nick?
Yeah, I think it's cheap, let's be honest. The bigger question that you've got, as you said, the company has been sort of shoring up their balance sheet, etc. So getting rid of a little bit of a couple of operations, number one, but number two, also operations that I think you know, they perhaps needed to spend a bit more time on, and so it's a little bit more efficient not having those operations any longer. So I can understand that. I think my longer term sort of worry around a company like City Lodge is that it's really aimed at your business sort of traveler. And, you know, post-COVID, yes, things are getting better. Yes, people are traveling for business again. The question is whether the demand is ever going to be at the levels it was in 2019 and or be increasing from there. And with that sort of unknown in the room, I certainly don't mind playing a little bit of these sort of hotel and sort of opening up kind of trades. But I prefer to have something that, you know, shored up a little bit better against, let's say, leisure spend, and not just necessarily the business sort of trend.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard, you know, those type of arguments where people said, you know, corporates will never be the same again. I mean, it's going to be a flexible work model where it's 2 days at home and 3 days in the office. What people are back at work now. I think all the bosses are tired of Zoom. So I don't know, man. Maybe people are gonna go back to business travel again. If that's happens, it's this one's gonna be an interesting one. Meryl, you have thoughts on City Lodge?
I agree with the. I'm sort of in between both of you. I think that you could be right that business travel does recover. I just think it could take longer than people expect. The investor would have to be patient. I'm not that familiar with the what City Lodge owns now, but I would caution anyone to just kind of look at the previous share price and say it's cheap now at 4 rand. Rather look at what is the earnings potential of the business now. Let's say if occupancies get back to that holy grail of 75% with the remaining assets, what should those assets produce
Wow.
in terms of earnings?
You said 75%. I had goosebumps. And I don't even hold the stock. That was, a good time for these guys. We've got a question here from Andre who says, "Hi, what's the panel's view on Kaap Agri at current prices? The price is quite low and they've been buying more fuel stations. Is it a good buy for 3 to 5 years? Thanks." I'll start with you, Meryl.
I actually don't follow Kaap Agri, in detail. I don't know if Nick's got a comment.
That's fine. Nick, I know you do because you send me reports every morning.
So Kaap Agri, I think it's a great business. It is a small business. I think it's got a solid management team. I think from a strategic perspective, they're doing some pretty interesting sort of things. Overall, I suppose in that space, it's quite a volatile sort of space. In terms of just what your costs are going to be, but then also what you're selling your goods at, etc. Overall, I do like it, however, at these sort of prices, and I do think it looks attractive.
Okay, so you're bullish, so no change in thoughts there. Do you follow Kibo Energy? I see it's an Irish company listed on the JSE. I'm keen to hear if anyone has thoughts on this one. Nope.
No thoughts.
Unfortunately, Jonathan, we don't follow Kibo Energy. We'll move to Rebosis. Any insights on Rebosis? It was due to release an announcement on the 15th, but missed the deadline, and it's been 10 days and counting. So clearly, there's something going on there, Meryl.
Yeah, I think it's never a good sign when releases are missed, so approach with
Caution.
caution.
Any thoughts on the assets, maybe? Or should we just go straight to stock picks? I think it's easier. Okay.
Your call.
O okay. Okay, Nick, your stock pick for the evening.
My stock pick this evening, I think, listen, I must say that starting off the day, and feeling a little bit nervous as to what's going to be announced tomorrow and what sort of tone is coming out of Jerome Powell's mouth. I was tending to be quite conservative in my pick. Having said that, after scouring the markets and seeing what's priced out there at the moment and what's priced in, I've decided to actually go for Mr. Price. So
Nice.
a South African retailing darling, as it were. I think strategically, what I think they've got legs. Almost irrespective of the macro environment in the South African context over the next couple of years, I really like the management team. I like the strategy. I like the way they're sort of going about their business. And ultimately, I don't think the stock is correctly priced for these sort of growth vectors to come through.
Okay.
And that's even in, as discussed, a really negative kind of macro backdrop. I think they do well and continue to take market share. So net net, almost, almost through the cycle, I think this price is that this company's got upside.
So you like the price of Mr. Price. Meryl?
Today I am going for a hospital, so I am my pick is Netcare. I think
Okay.
ironically, a pandemic was a horrible time to own a hospital stock. So much like your City Lodge and occupancies, where 75 is the holy grail. pre-COVID, Netcare's occupancies at the hospitals was 66 to 67%. The last print was 56%. So there's still a lot of normalization to happen there. Margins pre-COVID were in the mid-teens, kind of 15 to 16, and they're still single digit at this stage. So a big footprint, large fixed cost base, fixed asset base, that needs operating leverage from recovering occupancies. And what you said about people going back to the office, well, that's when the bugs start to spread, unfortunately. So what the hospital groups really need is for all of us to come out of our immunity bubble a little bit. We've seen a recovery in surgeries, but not yet in kind of more of the medical cases. And that recovery is underway. So the last it printed earnings of 60 cents, and pre-COVID earnings were between 120 and 170. So there's a big recovery still to come. Normalized, it's probably on a PE of 10. I think
Oh,
that's quite attractive.
interesting. Yeah, no, this is a bullish story for people getting sick. I like that. So Netcare and Mr. Price, thank you very much. Thanks to my guests, Nick Crail from FNB Wealth and Investments and Merrill Pick from All Mutual Investments. Do join Zinati for the Friday edition of Stockwatch. Send those questions during the day via SMS to 41392, to email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at Business Day TV using the hashtag Stockwatch. The show airs live at 19:30. Have a good evening and have a good weekend.
Thank you.